This story we heard in the gospel follows upon another one, and I want to just remind you of that other one so we get this into context. It starts out by saying these two recounted for the others what had happened to them on the way to Emmaus. So that story is these two disciples, this is Easter morning, disillusioned, having lost hope. They've seen the whole project of their time with Jesus fall apart as he was crucified. And now they're returning to their hometown of Emmaus, about 7 miles distant from Jerusalem. And as they're walking down the road, this man joins them. And they start talking to him. And he says, "What were you discussing on your way?" And they said, "Well, about Jesus of Nazareth, the prophet, great, and we had such expectations, and then he was crucified." And so then Jesus, although they don't recognize him, he explains all of the scriptures to them. And he shows how everything in the Old Testament, in the prophets and in the law, predicted what was going to happen to him. And he says, "You are so slow to understand that the Son of Man had to suffer and die and rise again on the third day." And so when they get to Emmaus, they urge him to join them for dinner in this inn. And so he joins them, and he breaks bread and gives it to them. And in the breaking of the bread, they recognize him. And then he disappears from their sight. Okay, that's what happened in the previous verses. Now they overjoyed, and they say, "Were not our hearts burning within us as he explained the scriptures to us?" So then they go back and they recount what happened to them, to the other disciples, and they just finish recounting this, and then Jesus appears to all of them. And he says, "Peace be with you." And then Jesus explains the scriptures to the whole group. And then he eats with them some baked fish. So what's happening here in Luke's gospel is these are sacraments, these are Eucharists, these are meals. There's a liturgy of the word, there's an explaining of the scriptures, and then there's a breaking of the bread or the fish, there's an eating, there's a meal. This is Eucharist, isn't it? We have a liturgy of the word where we unfold the scriptures and then we have a meal together. So in both cases, these disciples, the two on the road to Emmaus and the others hovered in the upper room, they're disillusioned, they're scared, they're struck with the meaninglessness of the situation. They can't make any sense out of it. How is it that he ended up being crucified, the one in whom we had put so much of our hope? How could it all end just like that? But when he opens the scriptures to them and shows how the Son of Man had to suffer, and how the only way that this makes any sense at all is through his suffering, the meaning comes clear to them. They're restored. Their hope is returned. In every generation, we're in that same situation. We live our busy, ordinary, earthly lives, and a lot of times it's difficult to make sense out of the things that happen to us. We get disillusioned along the way over and over again, and we experience failure and loss and grief and trouble. And the disillusionment has to do with the meaninglessness of it. The thing that's so hard to get through suffering is that it's so meaningless. And if we could get the meaning of it, it would be a little bit easier. And so we come here weekly to get the meaning, to have the scriptures opened for us, to hear once again, even though we've known it all our lives, to hear once again in scriptural ways that the Son of Man, the Son of God, came into our lives and suffered along with us. And that The redemption from our sins had to do with his suffering. The resolution of our difficulties, the restoration of our hope, it had to do with his suffering and dying. That God is the one who suffers and dies for the other. And that this is where the meaning is. Not that he gives an answer for our suffering, or not that he takes it away, but that he provides the deepest possible meaning that suffering can ever have, and that is that it participates in the suffering of God. That God is the one who is for the other, even at his own expense. And that, since we're created in his image and likeness, that's kind of who we are too. That suffering is not a horrible thing that happens to us by mistake or that is somehow unfair, but suffering is the very thing that makes us human, that makes us divine, that makes us participate in divinity because we learn how to suffer creatively. Dorothy Day once famously said, "Everybody suffers, but not everybody suffers creatively." In other words, how does creation happen in our suffering? How can suffering be redemptive? How can suffering be salvific? You know, we talk about offering up our sufferings for the poor souls in purgatory, or offering up our sufferings for the others we love, or for the salvation of the world. You know, the Christian church has taught that since day one. But I think this is a little bit of our understanding why the church teaches that. Because God does not intend for our suffering to end, but that it be creative, that it be redemptive. That we are able to find the meaning because we recognize that this is precisely one of the most powerful ways that we can participate in the life of God. We're in the Easter season, and the Easter season is about the resurrection that happens from the death and through the death. And so we're reading from the Acts of the Apostles, and we're reading from the gospel stories about those immediate occurrences after the resurrection. And these stories are primarily filled with this truth that we're talking about, that somehow the disciples of Jesus were able to make sense out of his death. They were able to see the resurrection from death, that they were able to see that suffering and death is not the end of the story, it's just the beginning of the story. And this is so instructive for us, this is so redemptive for us, this is so healing for us, that we are allowed through this great mystery to experience conversion, the forgiveness of our own sins, and the redemption of the world.